So when I realized I love micro, it almost became like a hassle to have to go take physics and chemistry. Cause I'm like, it's cool. It's dope. Like, it may connect to what I'm doing, but it wasn't my passion. And I think once I really honestly touched it, cause you really are only touching the surface in a college level course. Cause like, you know, there's many people in the class with you. You're all trying to get to the same level. You're not diving deep into one thing. You're just getting a taste of a variety of different things. And for me, I realized I like this. I'm kind of good at it. I want to dive deeper.
Welcome back, y'all, to another episode of Why Y'all Working. I'm your co-host, Michael Ogusanya.
I'm Alair Jameson.
We have the amazing Teniola Ido here with us. Say what's up to the people.
Hi, everyone. My name is Teniola, but I go by Tenny. So yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you. Now, Tenny is a PhD candidate in microbiology at NYU School of Medicine, where you have researched how microbes interact with the human body. Originally from the best, PG County, say what's up.
Absolutely.
You earned your degree in microbiology from Penn State before moving to the Weiser Lab in NYU. Tenny is passionate about making science more accessible, often sharing her journey as a researcher and microbe lover with diverse audiences. Tenny's work highlights not just the discoveries of science, but the challenges, pivots, and human stories behind it. Welcome, Tenny.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. And so we love starting with the first question. Tenny, why do you work?
Honestly, it's a simple yet loaded question. Why I work is, I feel like a big part of everyone's life or purpose is not just for yourself, but also just like impacting others around you. I think particularly why I really love the field of microbiology, like infectious diseases, because we all have the potential to be like infected by something, right? Whether it's the common cold or you wake up one day and you have like a runny stomach from like the stomach virus or something like that. I really love what I do because I feel like it's impactful to the greater society, especially through public health. And what I really enjoy about what I do is I'm discovering something new, like through my PhD research that can hopefully be helpful to other labs who are also researching similar things, or maybe later on down the line, it can be helpful to inform a new therapeutic for the bacteria that I work on. So I work because I love what I do. It's exciting and not only interests me, it affects the greater society. And I hope one day to really have like an impact in a way where it's like, when it comes to, well, I don't wish for another pandemic, I reject it. But in the event that we needed a specialist or somebody to come, it's like, they can call on me and I can be of use, you know, to hope that things aren't as devastating as they were with COVID-19 and things of that nature. So I work because I'm really interested in my field. I work because I know what I can do can impact many people. And I work because that also gives me my sense of purpose in life. So yeah.
Awesome. Your ikigai, that concept of, you know, finding how you can get paid well, what's something you can do consistently, and what's something that, you know, brings pride, brings a smile to your face every day. So we're going to get a lot into, again, what the work that you do and your studies, but let's start off with your beginnings. You know, we met at the, through the Meyerhoff Scholars Program, but tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. So I was originally born in Florida, lived in Canada for a little bit before settling in PG County, Maryland, where I did middle school and above. So I would say I was in Maryland. Honestly, as a child, I think coming from a Nigerian background, parents like immigrated here. So obviously, if you're familiar with that, I wouldn't even say my parents were like strict. I think my parents weren't as bad as what I typically hear from my peers. I would say they definitely valued education. Like they obviously wanted me to be better than what they accomplished. And they always wanted me and my brother and I to like go above and beyond. So I think that's where it all started. I think coming from a home that really valued education, that really pushed me, helped me. And I think also just innately, like I was somebody and I still am, I just don't like to be the last. I love to be the head, not the tail. Obviously in life, you're not always gonna be number one, but I wanna be as close to number one as possible. But yeah, so I went to school in middle school, Bowie, Maryland. I went to Benjamin Tasker. High school, I went to the Academy of Health Sciences at Prince George's Community College. And I would say that's where my passion for science really was shaped. I was always interested in like biology and stuff, but being in a dual enrollment program where you earned your high school degree and also an associate's degree it kind of already set me in a path towards a health related field. So doing that, I really loved biology, but it was really a microbiology course I took on PGCC's campus that I'm like, yo, like microbiology is truly where it's at. Like, and it was one of those fields people don't talk about much, right? You hear about chemistry or people who are really doing strictly like pre-med. I'm like, I didn't really love being in hospital settings. I'm kind of a germaphobe now that I really think about it. So being in hospitals made me feel like a little icky. So I'm like, I like science, but being a doctor, medical doctor wasn't of interest to me. But I think being in that program and knowing that I could go to graduate school, even though I didn't know what it really entailed, was kind of what set me off on that path. From there, I went to Penn State where I was in the Millennium Scholars Program. So like, as Michael mentioned, it is a sister program to the Meyerhoff program at UMBC. It started a little later and essentially had the same goals to help like underrepresented minorities pursue graduate degrees, PhD, MD, PhD. And what I really loved about that program is that it's not just about the money. I mean, the money's great, go where the money is. But I would say it was also about the support. I think someone where my parents obviously didn't pursue higher education, right? I was motivated, but it's not just about being motivated. It's about having mentorship and people who can advocate for you and people who can show you the path, you know, lead you in the right way, steer you in the right way. And what I liked about Millennium is that not only do they give you like a full ride, they also help you to figure out what do you want to do. You get like personalized advising. You had people already in your corner and a cohort of other students and friends who you were doing it with. So it's like, it was amazing to do what they call Summer Bridge right before college, where me and I think it was like 30 people in my cohort, like 29 other students, we went to Penn State like a few weeks early, spent the summer doing like a math course and English course and just getting acquainted to the campus. And that definitely set me up for success because Penn State is a huge school, as I'm sure you all are like familiar with. And it's intimidating. Like sometimes you can be the smartest person in the room, but if you don't have the environment to support you, right? Like it doesn't necessarily mean that you will be successful. But I think the Millennium Scholars Program was really imperative to my success because I was set up with a cohort of people who were taking similar classes as me. I had an advisor who really cared and was helping me. Our director at the time, Star, sensational woman. Like, she was one of those people who give you like tough love. Like, sometimes you want somebody to be easy on you, but I know I need somebody to tell me, no, like, you're not doing a good job, do better. And I'll wise up and I'll do better. And I think having her as a director and having other students who were just as motivated, if not more than me, was really what shaped me. I went in as a biochem major because I thought it sounded cool, but I realized, bro, like, I don't like chemistry like that. Microbiology was always my passion and I ended up switching like my junior year. But luckily a lot of the core classes were the same. And yeah, from there I studied microbiology. I did a minor in sociology because that was also something that was interesting to me. Graduated, and through that, in our program, we also did summer research programs. They required you to go somewhere, do research, or stay at Penn State and do research. And my final year, right before my senior year, I actually did the summer program at NYU. Loved it. Really got a feel of the microbiology community there and realized this was the perfect fit for me. Luckily, interviewed, got accepted. In fall 2020, I started as a PhD student there and I'm wrapping up next year. So I think the mentorship I got through Millennium, the good mentors I had in middle school and high school really helped me to get where I'm at right now. In addition to just being obviously like personally motivated and having friends around me who were also just as motivated, really kept me going. So I would say that really is what shaped my experiences.
I love that. Like, being able to continue going is huge. One thing I do want to kind of sidebar on is I still remember that it was the sociology. It was like the first seminar for people who were accepted. I remember at Penn State, I went there and I met someone by the name of Sam Richards.
Yeah, absolutely.
His content now is huge. People know him well. I mean, he's been doing this for decades. Yeah. Do you feel like Sam Richards had an impact on you pursuing your minor in sociology?
Honestly, Sam Richards and the whole center that he directed, him and his wife, Lori, World in Conversation was a big, I didn't go in thinking I was going to do a minor. I was very much so science or nothing. But Penn State, like you said, they require you to do these courses your freshman year. Was it every year? I don't remember, but I know you had to take a class where you would sit as a student with people you've never met before, maybe like a group of 10 of you in a room, and they would have dialogues where essentially like it could be about race, ethnicity, economic status, anything where it's like, it's typically, I'm not even gonna say it's taboo to talk about, but you're not talking about that with a stranger. No, you're talking about that with your friends and people who come from your background because you can relate and it feels safe. But you basically were put in a room with people who maybe nothing like you, maybe somebody else could be like your ally, but in the end of the day, like they're just asking you about who you are, how your experiences shape how you relate to other people in society. And honestly, it definitely helped me. And I would say Penn State developed my academic mindset, whatever. It also shaped my character. Being brutally honest, like my first 2 years, like coming from my background, I was very judgmental. Like I always felt like this is the right path. If you stray from this path, I don't know. It's not godly. It's not X, Y, and Z. That's just how I was raised. Christian mindset, whatever. I'm still Christian, don't get me wrong, but there's levels to being too religious, in my opinion. But that's a whole nother topic. What I'm saying is, though, I would say sociology and Walton Conversation and Sam Richards and all his like methods shaped me because it helped me to be really open to perspectives, even if I did not agree with them. Because I think in life, you're going to be in rooms with people you don't necessarily like what they say, what they agree with, but it's not like every moment I'm going to crash out. Like, it doesn't make sense. But it helped me to learn that, like, okay, like, what can I take from this person's perspective? What can I throw away? And how can I move forward, like, gaining new perspectives and ideas from people? You'd be in a room with people who would say, like, Penn State was, like, the first moment where they were opened up to, like, newer cultures. And I'm like, really? Penn State? Like, what are you talking about? Because to me, where I was coming from, I'm like, there's Black people, there's Asian people, there's Hispanic people. Heche County, like, it is majority Black. There's a lot of other cultures and a melting pot there. So when I came to Penn State, I felt like for me, that was like limiting. That was the first time I was around like a lot of white people. And I'm like, whoa, like for me, this, I felt like out of body. For other people, that was like their, I'm coming out, I've met so many people. I'm like, it's crazy. But being in World in Conversation and taking the sociology courses made me feel like there's no need to be judgmental. Like, we all come from different experiences. And I think the value in that is to learn what you can take from people and continue on with your life. Because there's people who I would never like one-on-one go and talk to them, but I was forced to be in a room with them. And as time went on, I developed in like the method they used there. I became a facilitator. I was somebody who was helping to actually foster those conversations. Honestly, it was life-changing. I think I've been involved in World in Conversation since my freshman year. And I taught one of the courses. I want to say it was my senior year. So not something I thought I was going to do. It had nothing to do with my major, but it's one of those experiences where it's like, it applies to your day-to-day life. You know, high key, like nobody's talking about infectious disease in my day-to-day life, but how do we relate to one another? That's a constant thing. So that definitely made a difference.
Love that. And that's really one more question up there.
You good?
But before we jump in, I wanted to key in on something. Because a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of people in your classes, you know, found biology is where they want to go. But what made you pursue biology past your four-year degree? A lot of people, you know, they get their biology degree and then they pursue research. They might pursue the private sector. But you decided that those 4 years weren't enough.
It's a great question. For me, it wasn't enough because, you know, with college, it's like you have your major, but they make you take all these other classes like gen eds and stuff to fulfill your requirements. Those were hard for me, not the content. I can do the classes, but for me, I realized it was really hard for me to focus on things that I was not passionate about. So when I realized I love micro, it almost became like a hassle to have to go take physics and chemistry. Because I'm like, it's cool. It's dope. Like, it may connect to what I'm doing, but it wasn't my passion. And I think once I really honestly touched it, because you really are only touching the surface in a college level course, because like, you know, there's many people in the class with you. You're all trying to get to the same level. You're not diving deep into one thing. You're just getting a taste of a variety of different things. And for me, I realized I like this. I'm kind of good at it. I want to dive deeper. And I knew with a PhD, I could dive deep. And a PhD was really interesting to me because like, I didn't have to focus on all the other stuff anymore. You couldn't make me take any more English courses anymore. Like, all I had to do was microbiology. And I'm like, this is dope. This is me. It's a bit of me and I want to pursue it more. I think what also helped, it's one thing to take the classes, it's another thing to actually do research. Because some people like learning the material, some people don't like doing the research, which is fair. We all figure out what we want to do. And I think because Millennium made us do summer research experiences, I had like 3 experiences and I realized, yo, like, I can do it. Like my first experience was hard because I've never really had my own independent project. But as time went on in college, I'm like, oh, I'm actually good at this. I can do it. And I can't wait. My mind back then was, I just want to discover something and put my name on it. And I was like, the PhD is the perfect way to discover something new, stamp my name on it, become famous, and just move on. Obviously, it's not that clear cut and dry. Like, I'm obviously going to publish a paper that has my name on it, but like, I'm not naming something after me, you know what I mean? But I think what made me pursue it further was I wanted to dive deeper, and I knew a PhD was the way to dive deeper in that field.
Thank you for sharing. I think that that's important. I really want to step back a little bit. You mentioned that the melting pot that is Maryland, we are kind of spoiled by being here, regardless of whether or not you're in PG or Anne Arundel like I am and, you know, other places. But we experience a lot of different things with different people, different cultures in this environment. And so when you had left, I want to touch on the fact that, like, you had mentioned that you felt out of place, right? Like out of body with the community, the environment, the day-to-day experience of not only just being in college and adjusting to that, but also getting to know your field and what the day-to-day would look like. And through your summer experiences, as you mentioned, I want to ask you, how does your day-to-day look like now versus how did it look back then? And what is, you know, your schedule, or what do you hope your schedule will be in the future? Are you going to be stuck in a lab somewhere? Are you going to be designing new things? Are you going to be discovering and going places with a mask? Like, how is that going to look like for you as you progress through your field now that you are almost finished with your PhD, you know, going to get out there in the field?
Yeah, it's funny because people always say never ask like a senior level PhD what they're doing next. Just let them figure it out. But I actually have an answer to that because I've been trying to figure that out. But to start with, what my schedule was like back in college, honestly, it depended semester to semester. Like I was just taking, because I already had some credits from the dual enrollment program I did, I was kind of able to take a lot of science classes all at once. Had its pros and cons. Like you don't typically want to take that many difficult classes at once, but like I had no other classes to take. So usually my morning started off with a lab. Like I used to have like a morning chemistry lab, then maybe like a medical microbiology or an immunology class. Honestly, it was a matter of just going to class, going back to my room, going to class, going back to my room. Later on in college, I got more involved in different organizations like the African Student Association, Caribbean Student Association. Because one thing about me, I'm really big on community. I love to have my close-knit community because like I said, like it's one thing to have the personal drive. You do need a team behind you. I'm a firm believer behind that. So most of my day-to-day just revolved around waking up, going to classes, coming back, doing homework, studying for a bit, and then sleeping. And then if not that, I would be in some type of board, exec board meeting for one of the orgs I was a part of. And then Millennium had its own requirements for advising and stuff. So in between that, it'd be advising. I would say it's different from my schedule now. My schedule now is more set in stone. Like in college, it's a little bit more sporadic. Like, you know your classes, but there's so many other things that you can be involved in. And I love to be involved. So I was doing that. Now as a fifth year, no, I'm in my sixth year now. Yeah, my sixth year. It feels more like a job schedule. Like, because you're more independent and you're doing your own research, I have my PI who's a great mentor who kind of guides me. But at this point, I'm way more independent. So I kind of just come and go as I please, which is also very much so lab dependent, which I know we'll talk about later. But luckily in the lab that I'm in right now, like I'm not micromanaged where I have to be in at a certain time. I have to leave by a certain time. My PI is more of this type of like, as long as you're producing work, he's not going to really tell you when you have to be here. Obviously, I'm not going to come in and leave 2 hours later. Like you have to be respectful, but I come in at like 9, 10. I leave around like maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, right? And I would say with a PhD, it's more unpredictable because depending on the techniques that you do, I do a lot of mouse animal work. Some days are very long, like 10 hours, 11 hours, whereas some days I'm just analyzing data. I can do that anywhere. I don't have to physically be in the lab. But my day-to-day is literally like typically like 6 to 8 hours in the actual lab itself, either doing experiments, analyzing data, or maintaining my mouse colony. At this phase of my PhD, I've been working on my paper, my first author publication, which is like a requirement to graduate. So it's been a lot of like putting my figures together, putting my data together, and then just having conversations with my PI as to like, does this make sense? Do you like the story that I'm trying to tell? So honestly, as of right now, like I'm kind of in a good place. Like I show up, do my data analysis, have a conversation with my PI. I leave. I've really been getting into fitness now, and there's a gym in the lab place that I work in. So go to lab, go to the gym, go home. So I would say my life is kind of well more balanced now than it was in college, which is crazy because typically the higher up you go, the more difficult it is. But I would say as a senior student, it's been easier to build a schedule. Early on, it's harder because you're taking classes while being in lab, which can be kind of like the college experience all over again. So yeah.
No, great. Thank you for sharing. And my follow-up after this, before I turn it over to Michael, would be when you're considering microbiology and learning this field and getting into it, what would be your suggestions for those who want to follow in your footsteps, eventually go out, either start their own company or start their own lab with the, you know, in conjunction with the university? What has that process been like for you in terms of navigating the different opportunities, even just within microbiome?
Yeah, that's a great question. My advice would be to network and get to know people. If you're really interested in the academic path, I think that's kind of, a PhD honestly is set up for you to be academic, like a faculty for a university, right? In the sense that you do your PhD, you make sure like you typically have to have a committee to graduate. They kind of help track your progress. So no matter what, if you make good connections, you'll have your PI and then your three committee members who can all like write rec letters for you and help you to get to that next stage. And typically after your PhD, it's a postdoc, which is like, at this point, it's more research, but you're expected to be independent, usually switch labs, go somewhere else. And that's your way to just get more top tier publications. From there, you apply to faculty jobs. So if you're interested in that route, that's pretty straightforward. I would say just make sure you're really productive in your PhD. You're publishing as good papers as possible. That has its own tangents, but that's a whole nother conversation as well. But make sure you're doing as well as you can for the field that you're in and making the connections with the faculty in your department and making sure that they can write good things about you when the time comes for you to get a postdoc. Or some people get a faculty position right off of your PhD. Not as common. You would have to be really like on top of the money, but it's not impossible. Now, if you're interested in like academia, not academia, industry or any other unconventional, I call them unconventional because it's not like the traditional path. That's where networking comes in. The good thing about NYU is that we have like a career center. We have a postdoc office that you can go to and talk to about other post-PhD opportunities. For me, I'm really interested in clinical microbiology. So funny enough, I've really been trying to shift gears from academic research to clinical, more translational research. My main goal would be to work in a clinical lab where I'm working on developing assays or things of that nature that help towards either detecting more infectious pathogens or just helping patients who are dealing with things. I realize my passion comes from doing work that impacts people's lives. I don't want to be a doctor talking to you every day, but I would love to work behind the scenes and making sure that like you're good to go. And that's the field I'm trying to get into. And for me, it took honestly just doing Google research, like what fellowships can I apply for afterwards? Who knows who? And I've actually been shadowing the clinical microbiologist at NYU. So it's like one of those things where maybe your third year, I don't think as a first year, you should stress yourself about that. Focus on your research, focus on getting to a good level where you're independent. The later you get, start talking to people, have conversations, like, and you're not even having these conversations to get something out of them, just to like pick their brain. What do you like about what you're doing? What don't you like? What skills do you wish you had acquired in your PhD? Because sometimes you don't even realize you need to start doing this now. You realize when it's too late, when you're trying to get that job 3 months before your defense, right? So my main advice is just being proactive. Start having those conversations early. If your school has like a career center, utilize them. It's free resources. Get your LinkedIn together. Because I used to be somebody who I don't really care about LinkedIn. I'm like, bro, like, I'm going to meet people in person. I don't need to do it. However, social media, the digital lifestyle, and making a brand and a name for yourself has become even more important as time goes on, because it's not always about, you can be somebody who has the skills, but if you can't market your skills, you're kind of useless. Somebody else who knows how to sell themselves better will get that position. So learning how to talk about yourself, having an elevator pitch, and networking becomes even more important when you're trying to get a job that's outside of academia when it comes to post-PhD opportunities. So my advice would be start early in terms of having those conversations. Be as productive as possible, because no matter what path you take, they want to see that you have publications or you've been doing things that can speak to your intellect, your ability to be well-rounded, you know, things of that nature. And just talk and network, because sometimes I used to be like, oh, people are lying. Sometimes it's really not about what you know. It really is who you know that will get you in that door. And then what you know will keep you in that place. So that's my advice.
Fire. Yeah, I hope people are listening, man. You got to take notes. Thank you, Tanya.
She dropped a lot of gems.
Facts. So my last question for this segment is, with everything that you shared, who is your community at this point?
That's a great question. Honestly, my community has been really interesting. Well, obviously, my number one community is family, right? Family, the only thing is my family is not here with me in New York. So like, if I'm really going through something, like I gotta call them, but like sometimes a phone call is just not enough. So I would say my family first and foremost back in Maryland, they have supported me. There have been really tough times in my PhD and I would have to call them. And honestly, I'd be in tears. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be here. Like maybe I made a mistake, but having people in your corner to remind you that, like, do you remember how motivated you were when you were applying to these programs? Do you remember how excited you were to get an interview? Like, it's not a matter of you not supposed to be there. You just need to get over this hurdle and continue on. And they were absolutely right. Because a lot of things that I was frantic about, give it a month, it wasn't even that important anymore. But I'm kind of dramatic. So I think that also ties into it as well. So that's another tangent. Outside of family, though, my friends and other students at NYU and other institutions in the city. One thing I loved about pursuing graduate school in New York City, especially coming from Penn State, which is like a small, huge school, but it's like in the middle of Pennsylvania. Like it's not like a city, you know, it's just a college town. There are so many connections to be made in New York City. And I would say what I'm grateful for are my friends here in New York. Like I knew, obviously, Mark, you know Effia, like from Meyerhoff. She was a Meyerhoff at UMBC. We connected when we both realized we were both going to NYU. And she has been like a big support system. And through her, I met other NYU students, similar background as mine, and we've been locked in since like our first year. It's crazy because a lot of them were like med students, and I realize I connect a lot with medical students than PhD students, which is probably why I'm interested in clinical.
Same, and I'm in finance.
It just happens. Yeah, I don't know. They just have a lot that intrigues me, and we all just mesh, so it's whatever. And I don't think we take life too seriously. Like, you know, there's balance. You're serious about school. I think what I love in my community right now is that they're all hardworking, especially women. Most of my friends are women, right? hardworking women who they know how to be serious and be studious about their work, but they know how to have fun and have a good time. And I think life, I used to be somebody who was like, when I get that job, when I start making six figures, yeah, that's when I can start living life. As sad as it is, you're never guaranteed that. You got to start living now. Like, I may not have the money to ball out in New York, but I have the money to be able to do small, small things here and there. And that's what I love in my community. So my family, my friends at NYU, and then I've been really involved in like the Black Student Union, our diversity initiatives at our school, and meeting other students through there and meeting other students who run their diversity orgs at like Columbia while Cornell has been great. One of my closest friends, her name is Ife. We both interned at Genentech, actually, an undergrad. And it was so funny because we actually got close when I realized she was a PhD student here at Cornell and I was at NYU, and she has been like amazing support. Like now she defended this year and she's in her own job, but having people who are even above you, who you can look up to, has been a really important part of my community because it shows that like there's light at the end of the tunnel. I will defend my thesis. I will get a job and I will have a village there to celebrate just like I celebrate them as well. So my family, my friends here in New York, and my friends back home in Maryland. Like I have friends from high school, from college who have been, they don't fully understand what I do, to be fully honest, which is okay. But like, they come up to visit me, and it's nice to just have somebody who knows you from when you were younger, when you were before all of this, to just kind of like bring you back to earth and remind you that like you're even more than just a PhD student. You have other interests, you have other hobbies. Like, enjoy that. So yeah, my community is my family, my friends back at home, my friends in New York, and friends that I've met like in other PhD programs in the area. So it's been great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I felt like, that almost felt like a prayer, the way you like expressed everything right there.
You need prayer. Like in life, we need prayer. So yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Tenny. This is an amazing conversation. Can't wait to dive a little bit more deeper into your degree and what that means for you and for the world with the work that you do. So thank you so much, Tenny. Anything you'd like to share with the community? How can they reach you?
Yeah, for sure. I actually have a science page at Tenny Talk Science where I like to document my journey and then give advice to anybody who's interested in what I do or maybe interested in pursuing a PhD and just want to see how life typically looks like. So if you want to reach out to me, definitely follow me on there. And yeah, I'm open to any questions, any discussions, things of that nature.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I'm your co-host. This is a great episode of Why I'm Working. I'm Michael Ogusanya.
I'm Alert Jameson.
And thank you, Tenny.
See you next time.